We're on a low budget.
Order. We have present this morning Representative Larson, Representative Ward, myself, Representative Abood, Representative Cowdery. And down in Juneau, I understand that Representative Miller and Representative Locker are in attendance at the teleconference site. The bill we're going to hear this morning is, let me see here, HJR 39, creating an appropriation reserve fund, or in other words, cash-based budgeting. We also have, I would caution everyone again on your mics, flip your buttons up, turn them off when you're through speaking. I note sitting at the table to observe is Representative Szymanski. We do have with us aide to Representative Hayes, Neil Phelps Munson, who wishes to give testimony at this time. Mr. Munson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, I am Neil Phelps Munson. Administrative aide to the Speaker of the House, Joe Hayes. The legislation before you is not brand new. The legislation under its present number was introduced in March of last year by the Speaker and seven or eight co-sponsors. A version of it was introduced 4 years ago by then Minority Leader Joe Hayes and 26 co-sponsors. The current version, however, the committee substitute, which I understand the committee is considering, is very, very different from the historic bill. The only corollary to such a budgeting practice that we've been able to discover in any significant government entity is that in Alberta, the province in Canada. And its budgeting system is similar, but distinctly different from this one. Cash-based budgeting in the executive summary that's been passed out to the members of the committee here in Anchorage is subtitled A Response to Revenue Uncertainty. It is a good deal more than that, however. I must apologize to the committee that the entire report, these 40-some page report, which was done by the House Research Agency, is not ready. We had hoped to have it ready today. However, it was the Speaker's opinion that we'd far sooner have the perfected product a little late than an imperfect product sooner. The executive summary before you is excerpted from that 40-page summary, which will be ready within a few days. The full report was, in fact, delayed by the very dragon which cash-based budgeting would slay, and that is revenue uncertainty. Revenue uncertainty is a thing which has been a bugaboo in Alaska, particularly since the oil days, and everyone's familiar with the decline in prices, first the radical jump and then the precipitous decline in oil prices and oil market just a few years ago, which gave us a wild heyday of spending and then an unexpected crunch. And that revenue uncertainty is a thing that cash-based budgeting is designed to eliminate. The concept of cash-based budgeting is very, very simple. It means only that the state would budget, that is, the executive and the legislature would budget only known cash in the bank. Instead of betting on the come, as the state currently does, that is, the administration going to work each fall and the legislature each January to prepare a budget based on revenues which each hopes will begin arriving on July 1, the administration would go to work in the fall with a very reasonable certainty of how much money is available. The legislature would go to work in January knowing exactly how much money was in the bank that could be budgeted. This would be done by reserving over a period of 7 or 8 years an amount of money equal to an anticipated 18 months of state income. Now, originally, and in many of the last discussions which the committee heard on this idea, a 12-month reserve was contemplated. However, since the legislature operates in a calendar year and the Treasury on a fiscal year, by reserving an 18-month income chunk, then when the legislature goes to work in January, money will still be being reserved for next year. But beginning July 1, there will be a full year's available revenue budgeted. The during the current session, according to the extract before you, legislative attention on cash-based budgeting is focused on long-term payment plan for developing the CBB reserve fund, and that's the one anticipated by annual or monthly incremental deposits into the reserve, which would be held against future budgeting. There are a variety of virtues to cash-based budgeting in addition to just the certainty which would be accessible to the legislature. The legislature, instead of having to guess and work with uncertain revenue figures, would know exactly how much money it might budget. In addition to that, however, there is a remark on page 5 near the bottom. Says the fiscal benefits and limitations of cash. No, that's not either. I'm sorry. It's on page 6, the second paragraph, bringing certainty to the budgeting process. The summary is perhaps not precisely clear on that because it points out that municipalities and school districts, it doesn't mention other entities such as hospital districts, which are reliant upon state revenues, would still have an uncertainty. Indeed, they would, but they'd have a far better look at what might be available to them. Now, what they would get, of course, still depends upon legislative appropriation, but at least they'd know how much money was in the bank, and based upon what they got last year and what their reasonable demands this year were, they would have a far better look at it and a far easier time of budgeting. The remaining major benefit of the cash-based budgeting scheme is that once it is in place, there would be in the bank an 18-month income figure. That is, it would be a reserve equal to an average 18 months income. And that's contemplated, according to the computer model prepared by the House Research Agency, is $4.836 billion if cash-based budgeting were begun in 1986. What that means is that we would have as an earnings account that $4.8 billion as an essentially static amount. Now, the immediate reaction is, well, you can only invest that money for 1 year. It's not true, because when the computer here in Juneau goes to work on July 1 of any given fiscal year and pays that day's bills, it puts that day's income into the reserve also of an approximately equal amount, so that $4.86 billion stays essentially the same amount of money. And while, sure, you pull money out of it to spend, those aren't earmarked dollars. It's essentially a $4.86 billion investment nut that can continue because you don't pull it out in giant chunks. The state pays its bills every day. It's unusual that a bill for anything over a few million dollars is paid. So what we have is another earnings account comparable to, possibly at the outset, in excess of the permanent fund, which could be invested in essentially the same way. It is accessible to long-term investments. And the computer model estimates about a $400 to $500 million income addition to the state. So there's yet another advantage to the system. The researchers who have put together the report and the Speaker's office, which has done a tremendous amount of work on this legislation this year and last, and some in the intervening period since its first introduction in 1979, have discovered virtually universal acceptance of the concept, that is, the practice of cash-based budgeting. The argument is and will be, I'm sure, how do we get there from here? Now, the report contemplates, for example, use of permanent fund earnings. This is not in the bill, as you're all aware, but it is an accessible alternative, which the Speaker's office and the research agency in particular felt should be explored, because questions would be asked about it, and we needed to know what the effects and possibilities were. They're essentially attractive. However, they would interrupt the distribution of dividends from the permanent fund for a period of years. If a part of the, all or a part of the earnings were diverted into the reserve fund to make cash-based budgeting possible. That's discussed in a little detail in the executive summary before you, in very significantly greater detail in the full report. I have a draft copy of the full report in front of me, and I'd be happy to share it with any member but just a very, very few of these were prepared because it is at this hour still being edited and amended, and they watch the computer practically every minute to bring the figures as up to date as possible. There is a discussion of the possibility of bonding, that is to sell bonds for about $4.8 billion to create that nut with which to begin cash-based budgeting. That probably is economically possible. It's possibly economically feasible. It probably isn't practical because it would tax the state's bonding capability to or very near the limit and quite possibly reduce the state's present AA bond rating to A or even possibly A minus. It perhaps merits further investigation, but appears not to be the way to go at this point in time. The clearest choice seems to be that which is laid out in the legislation, the draft legislation which the committee is considering, which is monthly incremental deposits from the general income stream. Now, the legislation is proposed as a constitutional amendment, because as one legislator put it to me, you can't trust the legislature. Quite obviously, if the fund were being created by annual appropriations, two or three years down the line, if there were a fiscal crunch of some kind, the temptation to tap that fund would be huge. If it is put in place as a constitutional amendment, then the legislature does not have access to it until the contemplated time, that is when cash-based budgeting is supposed to begin. The execution of cash-based budgeting becomes very, very complex, and that's why there's a 10-page summary before you and a 40-page report study on its way to you. The concept is very simple, as I've stated. It seems to be almost universally acceptable. It has been applauded by municipalities, by school boards, by other entities dependent upon the state. We have talked to a number of bankers about it, and of course many other legislators, and as I pointed out, the original concept 4 years ago, 5 years ago now, was endorsed by 27 members of the House going in. So I suppose what it amounts to is that right now Alaska has the opportunity. This cash-based budgeting is something that Alaska can do right now, which probably no other state has the opportunity to do, and which, given the income curve that the computers, both at House Research and in the Treasury, prepare for us, this might be just about the last chance Alaska will have to institute such a program, because we are headed for a downturn around or near the end of the decade in our income stream. If we don't do this now, given the concomitant increase of demands upon state revenues during that same period, we might have failed the opportunity forever. So it's kind of a now or never situation, at least according to what the numbers tell us at this point. I appreciate the opportunity to testify, and I'd be pleased to answer any questions that I can.
Questions from the committee, Mr. Cowdery?
Yes. There's many, as you, I think, touched on, there's many projects that are in the budget now, say in 1984, that will be funded this year. However, the project actually won't hit the street till some time later, and maybe a year or two more. And I think, as I heard you, you was trying to figure out some avenue or some way of capturing the interest on that account. I mean, or that money that was being appropriated, or is that what we're talking about, some of the money that's appropriated now until it finally gets to the project to capture, recapture the interest on that?
At this point, Mr. Cowdery, that's not addressed specifically in the legislation. It is tangentially addressed in the report. However, that interest becomes a part of the general fund, and the legislation before you contemplates monthly deposits into the reserve account, so it would contribute to that. Now, it would be possible in your legislation to assign all that interest to this account, to this reserve account. The reserve account, you'll notice, would trigger cash-based budgeting when a certain amount of money is reserved. In other words, when an average 18-month income nut is reserved, then cash-based budgeting would begin with the next fiscal year. So if that were added to the contributions to the reserve, it would accelerate it, and by very considerably. I don't know what the figure is, but I know there's a very, very substantial amount of money that is available through that route.
Yeah, I think that, if I may continue, Mr. I think that's a sore spot with many legislators, that We fund projects that don't hit the street, and meanwhile, various agencies put that in interest-bearing account, which is used for operating or for whatever, not certainly maybe not in the intention of the original appropriation. And I know that this might be an avenue that would harm no one. It would seem to me that, that we could develop and recapture some of that interest for this cash or forward funding or higher cash-based budgeting. I know in the past lending institutions have financed projects, and that's in essence what we're doing, and the standard practice is in many instances is they say, as you proceed with the project, come in, we'll pay your bills. Meanwhile, they reserve that account, and I'm certainly, it's not a dead account, it's drawing interest, and it would seem to me a prudent way that probably we could capture a substantial amount of interest towards funding this project, or this concept.
The idea may be a very, very good one, and one that the committees might very well want to put into the legislation. While it's not precisely free money, it's unanticipated income. And I've heard it said that some of the municipalities have a way of doing this with state money also.
Yeah, that's my understanding, that there's very evasive when I've questioned them in the past just how this would work, and I'm not certain myself, but I think that the certainty of having a good understanding would perhaps be, as I suggested, that we can appropriate the money, and at that time, as the projects proceed, we could disperse funds for that particular project. But meanwhile, we would still have the control of the account. I think we have to also watch the not only the administration, but the not only the municipalities and the boroughs, but also the administration of that. We should set up some avenue that would address this and put this into this type of an account.
I'm sure the Department of Revenue can come up with some numbers for the committee.
In other words, Neil, you're saying that in the projects that are out in the municipalities, for instance, in Anchorage, and they have $10 million to do some roads or streets or whatever, and they don't get that, they don't do that job for 3 or 4 years or whatever it turns out to be, that, and they put the money in the bank or they invest it, then they live off that interest during that time, or they use it for other things that are not, it's not dedicated, it isn't anything, they can use it for anything, evidently. You're saying then that the interest earned by that dedicated fund for roads, so to speak, that should, we could do something in the bill that would take that interest and put it into this fund. Is that where I'm coming from on that? Is that where you were, what you're saying?
The idea was not mine, it was Mr. Cowdery's, but it certainly it certainly sounds plausible. It could be done quite simply, I should think, by the state treasury not advancing money for municipal projects until they are ready to be built. The interest then would be accrued to the general fund.
Then the other point is that by doing that, would we not have a better handle on how much money that the municipality has instead of going in and giving them money every year? And we don't know how much they've got left over from the last batch of monies that were given them.
I've made two observations on that. First, yes, I'm sure you would, Mr. Chairman. You'd have a better track of their accounting stream. I'm not sure, and I guess this is a political and philosophical opinion, I'm not sure it's a responsibility of the state to keep track of the municipal accounting stream. However, if the state retained appropriated monies until projects were underway and made incremental payments to the projects, then the interest would accrue to the general fund as the general fund is presently managed, and that interest could be used as a part of the contributions to the cash-based budgeting reserve.
Now, as we make our investments, we take this fund, we set it aside, and we're going to invest that now for over a period of years on this thing. What type of investments do you feel, and who would make these investments to be sure we got a decent return on the money?
There's considerable discussion of that in the report from the House Research Agency, the 40-page report that I mentioned. As a matter of fact, I think you've had a copy of the draft. You probably haven't had a chance to read it. It is contemplated that it would be managed along the same lines as the general fund or as the permanent fund, which is a little more cautious and on a longer-term basis than the general fund is capable of being. That's open to question and, of course, subject to the committee's judgment. But there is quite a little information and conjecture information available in the report.
Would there be any possibility that we would have to set up another, as we have with the Permanent Fund Commission or the Permanent Fund Board that makes it, excuse me, makes these investments, would we have to set up another board to be able to manage this fund, invest this fund, as we have done with the Permanent Fund?
You ask if we would have to. I don't think we're compelled to in any sense. I think a judgment needs to be made whether we need the same grade and level and style of investments as either the general fund at present or the permanent fund at present has. Now, once the original reserve, that is the original 18-month reserve is established so that cash-based budgeting becomes a function of the state treasury, then income goes to the general fund anyway, but is reserved and may not be spent until it's aged 18 months, you could say. So probably to have the general fund manage this reserve for the reserving period, which is contemplated as 7 or 8 years, would be adequate. But there again, that's something the committee wants to take a very hard look at, I'm sure.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Larson.
Thank you. If we may back up a little bit, I think we were on a subject a little while ago that we probably need to have a lot more information on, and that is what happens to the money once the grant is made to various municipalities. Mr. Chairman, there are arbitrage laws that a municipality cannot retain the money for more than a year's period of time. During the period of time, it does have the money. I would be very, very disappointed in any municipality that did not invest it in order to get interest. That interest oftentimes is used, and it is most oftentimes insufficient to cover the administration cost of the grant in which the money was granted for. And oftentimes municipalities are forced to accept grants that they themselves may not personally be interested in, but some nonprofit organization within their boundaries are receiving. So I really don't think we have any source of additional revenues to the state by holding back payment to municipalities on grants. But I guess my main question to, or my main question at this time, and I guess it's the understanding that I haven't had in a long time, Neil, and what I'm listening today, I'm kind of starting to like or enjoy. But the $4.86 billion, I would anticipate that even at 10% interest, the revenues derived from that would just be under $500 million per year. Is that then to supplement the declining oil revenues, or what is that to supplement that the budgeting, say, in 1994, 1995, when it would be in effect?
The interest accrued by the relatively static $4.8 billion would be just a part of the income stream on any annual basis. And so just like oil revenue or fishing license revenue or whatever would be required to go into the Treasury, age for 18 months before it could be spent. I believe the legislation before you contemplates a spending limitation, that is, a limitation of the increase in spending each year. And so that automatically would help to enlarge the reserve, hence to enlarge the income stream. And so, yes, in fact, it would function as a hedge against the diminishing income to the state, which is to the state from its existing sources, which is contemplated to begin around the end of the decade.
How would that be different than what the present permanent fund would be with its future goals as to protect the state by providing added revenues in the future when the oil revenue declines?
In two ways. One, presently the 50% of the income of the permanent fund is under current law to be distributed to the citizens of the state. Therefore is neither available for reinvestment once those checks have been written or for use by the general fund. That, of course, can be changed. In the other way in which it differs, of course, is that this would be a part of the main income stream and would be a part of the general fund, would be a part of this program of A, reserving for a following year's budgeting, and B, create an income stream for the general fund rather than for distribution or whatever.
At the rate of revenue flow into the stream to provide the $4.86 million within a 7 to 8 year period of time, would that still leave sufficient revenues to, say, add to the permanent fund principal account during those years, or would it take all of the money for that account?
You mean aside from the dedicated income stream to the permanent fund? Yes, it would. According to the computer model here in, or in, yes, here in Juneau, down in Juneau, forgive me, I have trouble remembering where I am. Approximately 11% of annual income at the beginning would be required to go into the reserve. That is unrestricted general fund income is the specific definition of it. That's aside from dedicated income, that which goes to the permanent fund and the few other little dedicated funds that we have. That would decline over the years into the eighth year, but between 9 and 11% is what's contemplated. There again, of course, it's subject to the committee's discretion. One of the things that is contemplated in the report is the possibility of using what's known as the undistributed income account of the permanent fund. The permanent fund exists in four separate parts, and that is discussed in the report which you'll receive from the House Research Agency. There is the main nut or corpus of the fund. There is the income stream, which is divided three ways. The 50% of the income stream, which is earmarked for distribution. The amount, which varies, but is used for inflation proofing. And then the remainder of the income stream, which is known as the undistributed income account. Now, in fact, that's dumped right back into the corpus and is invested just as the main body of the fund. However, it is identified separately for accounting purposes. That right now amounts to something near $500 billion. One of the things the report discusses is using that nut of money as an initial or grubstake contribution to the reserve. It then would begin earning for the reserve immediately and reduce the amount required to be contributed from the general fund income over the reserving period. In addition to that virtue, it of course could shorten the time at which we begin cash-based budgeting.
Neil, has cash-based budgeting ever been done? Has it been done in other states, and if so, how many states have cash-based budgeting?
No other state has it, Mr. Chairman, at the present time, and we've not been able to discover that any other has done it. There have been a few which perhaps had the opportunity to do it. Texas at one time probably could have. Wyoming, Montana might have had the opportunity to do it at one time. Louisiana might have. None has.
We don't have that.
The nearest corollary we've been able to discover is the province of Alberta, and it has something like it, but not precisely this.
Is there a particular reason why it hasn't been done that you're aware of?
None. No identified reason that I'm aware of, no.
I see. Evidently, it just hasn't been tried. I'd like to go to Juneau, to the representatives there. Are there any comments at this point, in the hearings that you'd like to make?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Do you hear me okay?
I'll lead you loud and clear.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I do have several questions, several comments. Number one, I was a few seconds ago startled to hear that it's contemplated that the startup fund for this startup money for this fund might be the current undistributed income account.
That's disgusting.
We've
explored all avenues.
Which says is now approaching $500 million. Of course, if we use that money from the undistributed income account, that completely precludes are paying into the permanent fund some $400 million that we currently owe to the fund. As you are well aware, we appropriated the money some years back, or we authorized the appropriation, but we didn't actually appropriate the money. Both Governors Hammond and Sheffield have been dropping bucks into that fund from time to time, but there still remains a $400 million obligation that the election and for that matter the administration has not yet fulfilled. And to take that money away to start this new fund when we still owe $400 million if we were doing that in the private sector in our own savings accounts, I think most of us would be accused of rather shabby accounting. I'm also curious if the proposers of this legislation are still talking about people's permanent fund dividends away in order to fund this. When the program was first announced in the press during the interim, the press apparently asked the proposers where the money was to come from, and one of the answers was, well, to begin with, we'll reduce the people's permanent fund dividends and get part of the money from that source. That, of course, is a source that grew that got great opposition from at least this legislator, and I know of a number of others, and I know from a number of people who called me right away to say that the legislature should not be taking away the people's money in order to fund this new scheme. Those are the more in the nature of statements than questions. My question is this. The statement was made that this new plan has been applauded by municipalities. I wonder how many, if any, municipalities have applauded this plan with the proviso in it that they're going to get 11% less revenue sharing. In other words, if you're going to reduce the state spending about 11%, that money's got to come from somewhere. And, of course, we're already not funding the statutory obligation that we have in the area of revenue sharing. The statutes call for us to share revenues with municipalities at X amount of dollars each year, and particularly for the last couple of years, and even, I'm sorry to say, prior to that, we have not funded those municipal obligations to the full extent that's required by the statutes. Now it would appear that we, in order to get the money for this new fund, we would probably have to cut back even more on the shared revenues to municipalities. I wonder if in their applause for the plan that the witness could indicate if the municipalities anticipated getting less shared revenues. And actually, I would also be curious for the names of those municipalities who have applauded the plan. Thank you.
Mr. Munson, would you care to respond?
To the extent that I can, and it's appropriate, yes, Mr. Chairman, I will. As far as use of the undistributed income account is concerned, the only reason that is in the report is that because the Speaker's office, the Speaker himself, and the research agency felt it responsible to explore and make information available on any possibilities that existed for funding the reserve for cash-based budgeting. That was mentioned by a number of people as a possibility that could be used, so we explored it, developed numbers on it, and so forth. The report has not been created in a vacuum, neither has the bill before you been created in a vacuum. There have been a lot of people, including members of your committee, already involved in the preparation of this legislation. Excuse me. With respect to the $400 million deposit, which is still considered to be an obligation to the permanent fund, when that was originally authorized by the legislature, if I recall correctly, it was $1.8 billion 2 years ago. The $400 is what remains of that. Obviously, it was not accomplished immediately. It is still being accomplished. The 11%, if that's what it turns out to be, contribution from general fund to the cash-based reserve would certainly, at least potentially, slow the completion of that obligation, but there's no reason in the world that it would eliminate it. As far as the municipalities are concerned and the potential of an 11% reduction in revenue sharing, that, of course, would depend upon where the money does come from. If the money comes from the income stream of the permanent fund, then it would not affect revenue sharing. If the undistributed income account of the permanent fund is used as what's called a grubstake contribution to the reserve, it certainly would reduce the possibility of damage to the municipal revenue sharing money stream. As far as the names of the individual municipalities, I cannot identify them specifically. However, I'm sure the Municipal League could provide some information on that. The legislation was discussed before the Municipal League at its annual meeting in Juneau, where there were some 500 people in attendance, and there was very general applause for the concept, not for the execution. When the idea was presented there, the principle of cash-based budgeting was presented, and the possible ways of funding it, of funding the reserve, were discussed. The concept was applauded. I'm sure that a number of the municipalities would have different feelings on how to get there from here. That, it seems to me, is the debate the legislature faces right now.
Thank you. I would like to go to Homer at the moment, Mr. If I may. Mr. Miller, was that you?
Yes, it was, Mr. Chairman. I have a couple of follow-up, and Representative Locker also has a question she would like to ask.
Yes.
I'm just kind of curious, again, on this municipality thing. I wonder if it would be safe to, if Mr. Munson feels it would be safe to say that probably no municipality would favor this if they thought it was going to result in a cut in the shared revenues. Would he agree with that statement?
I really don't know, Representative Miller. I would say that a majority of municipalities would oppose an 11% reduction in the stream of their municipal revenue sharing, most assuredly. However, since that isn't a necessary concomitant of cash-based budgeting, they might still be willing to consider the alternative ways of funding the reserve.
Fairbanks.
Well, I think you would agree with me that the money sometime or other is going to have to come from somewhere. If we're going to reduce general fund spending by 11%, I don't see how the municipalities can be, can be spared. Well, in any case, Representative Walker has a question, Mr. Speaker, so I'll relate to the microphone here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to say that as a longtime Alaskan, I get a little concerned each and every time legislators decide that we need to amend our Constitution. So possibly I may come off as just a little prejudicial. However, when in fact we do decide that we need to amend the Constitution,
how many amendments are to the federal Constitution?
23? Then I guess I'd like it to address issues that are of strong concern to me. And in this case, it would appear
that
we are concerned with bringing certainty to the budgeting process. And in an amendment that passed recently to the Constitution, we ensured, number one, what would appear to many people to be a spending limit, when in fact may sometimes be not quite what it was intended to do. But what we have assured is that a percentage of general fund income would go towards capital budget for the state legislature. I would ask Mr. Munson if, in fact, any real effort has been made from the Speaker's office in constructing this legislation to ensure for municipalities that they would get a percentage of all income from our resources, or a percentage of our general fund, or a percentage of the budget, if you will, secured to them in this legislation. It would appear to me that what we often do is secure for legislators, future legislators, at least an amount of money that will be theirs to spend and really give to the communities who are there on a day-to-day basis providing services, no security in their budget. And I guess I would like to add to that, Mr. Chairman, that we also do the same with our schools. We short fund foundation funding, short fund municipal system revenue sharing. And probably do this because it is a large sum of money and it's a place that we can always look to cut. And I'm wondering if this would be legislation that would be more quickly to gain the applause of not only 500 members at a municipal league, but probably all municipal officials in the state of Alaska.
Mr. Cowdery will answer the first part of the question, and then Mr. Munson will answer the second part.
Yes, Barbara, I'd just like to comment. I think we're all concerned of amending the Constitution. I think that's a very serious universal concern. But I'd like to remind that I think there's over 24 amendments to the federal Constitution, and that some of these, without these amendments, I think that the United States wouldn't be as in good a position as we are now. And I think that you got to use prudence, I'm sure, but I'm not want to just open up for any amendment, but I think that the idea of never amending, having that opportunity when we see something that might be benefit all the citizens, I think that we should at least have amending the Constitution.
And one other step on there, that I believe that if we do have a constitutional amendment, it must be a specific, that it isn't really opened up to everything in the world. And I think this is the problem that we have when we think about the talk about amending the Constitution, that we're going to get all kinds of things in there. Well, I don't believe that's correct. I believe it has to be limited to a very specific amendment. So perhaps that would, I too have heartburn about opening it up, but if we can hold it to one specific, then I think I could probably go along with something of that nature. Mr. Munson will answer the second part.
I want
to add, as a matter of interest and not argument to Mr. Cowdery's comments, the federal Constitution has both been amended and unamended, as in the case of the Prohibition Amendment that you mentioned. Women's voting rights was a constitutional amendment, and the ERA is contemplated as a constitutional amendment. With respect to the municipalities and a guarantee of some sort for the income stream to them, no, that is not contemplated in this legislation. It has been discussed at considerable length in the preparation of this legislation and in the preparation of the report. Decision was made by the Speaker's office and the House Research Agency and by legal advice at the same time, that those provisions would not be an appropriate part of this legislation. A lot of other things were considered, as, for example, legislation which is before the House at this hour, which is for biennial budgeting. That was discussed as a possible part of this legislation and considered not to be appropriate for this particular piece of legislation. That would not require a constitutional amendment, as this would. The guarantee of a share of the budget or some kind of income stream to the municipalities might be very appropriate companion legislation, and I'm sure the Speaker's office would be happy to work on such legislation with any members interested in it. But as to being a part of this bill, it would not be appropriate.
Thank you, Mr. Munson. At this time, with your indulgence, please, I'd like to go to Homer. There's a gentleman been waiting there for quite a while. I'd like to go to Homer. Mr. Bentley, are you on, please?
Yes, Mitch, I'm here. This is David Bentley of Homer. Mr. Munson, I'd like to commend you and the people who work with you on this for this legislation. I have not had a chance to read your report. It isn't available here. You have shown some fiscal restraint that has been sorely lacking in the legislature for 25 years. Your ideas on it are amazingly about the same as mine, except that I would bite a little larger bullet myself. I propose that 25% per year of the anticipated revenues available for capital projects be laid aside in a separate fund. The money invested by the permanent fund, since they seem to be getting the best interest rate of anybody around, that money kept in that fund, the interest money kept in that fund. At the end of the fifth year, you would draw out 80% of the monies in that fund, including the interest accrued, and put all of the anticipated revenues for the next year into the account. Over.
Yeah, thank you. Let me interrupt you in just a second. Mr. Munson, you can answer that or respond to it. I would at this time, because it's 10:22, those stations that do not have any participants, if you wish to go off the air now, you may. And while I'm still on this break right at the second, I'd like to test Kodiak to see if there's anyone there. Doctor, would you see?
Mary Jo and Kodiak, let's give a try and see if you can transmit yet. For those who may not be listening, Kodiak can receive us. They have a technical problem, but we're able to transmit. We have Alaska on working on it. So, Kodiak, go ahead and let's see if we can hear you now.
Yes, sir. All right, for those that have no participants or observers, if you wish to shut down your teleconference site at this time, you may do so. However, I will remind you that we're going back on with another bill again this afternoon, and I think you'll probably have some interest there also. So at this time, please shut your system down. Mr. Munson, would you care to continue with Mr. Bentley's testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Bentley, for your comments and your compliments. However, the compliments are not due me. They're due the Speaker and the members of this committee and the House Research Agency who have done the work on this legislation and the very, very impressive, substantial report they prepared. I am impressed with the report they put together. As far as the 25% of annual capital projects money going into the reserve is concerned, that's an option accessible to the committee. So you're testifying to the committee, not to me. I'm not writing the bill. The committee is. I would point out that because of the existing spending limitation, which does address capital budgeting, that would be further reason for the constitutional amendment. And at the same time that cash-based budgeting were made a constitutional amendment, then the existing spending limitation would have to be amended also. The idea could be a very good one. Politically, it could be kind of tough, it seems to me, but that's an opinion, and I don't give opinions.
Well, it seems to me, Mr. Munson, rest of you members of the committee there, that we are going to have to bite the bullet on this, and I think everybody's going to have to do an equal job of chewing on it. As far as the constitutional amendment on the spending limit, let me take a look here at them.
Another scholar on midst. He's taking a look at it.
I'm glad that
he's studying the material.
He's what?
Yeah, I
says that the money must be didn't say dedicated, I'm trying to find the wording here.
I think what you find, Mr. Bentley, it specifies that one-third of each annual budget must go to capital projects.
Yeah, I was looking for the exact wording in there on one little part of it, and I can't seem to find it at the moment. It said that it didn't say that it had to be spent that year. It just said that it had to be dedicated to capital projects. So if you put the money aside in the fund and then went to spend it the sixth year, you would have that amount of money still there, plus the interest on it. And everybody making out better. We might have to bite the bullet for until the sixth year, but we'd sure make out a lot better out of the deal.
Just say yep.
Mr. Ward, would you care to comment?
Yes, I would. Mr. Bentley, this is Representative Jerry Ward, and I'm a co-sponsor of this legislation. But I had something posed to me, and I would like to get your opinion on it. This appears to be something that we need to and we must do, but the actual effect of it was posed to me last night in a constituents meeting, that what we would be doing is setting up a permanent fund for the operating budget of the state of Alaska, which I think I, because I know the needs and the goods the operating budget does, I don't disagree with. But I do work for the people in my area, which they brought very clearly to me last night. They said, will this give a blanket operating ticket sum of money that's permanent to a bureaucracy that they possibly won't be able to control? And should we be doing this? Should we be setting up a permanent fund for the operating expense of the state of Alaska in this manner, to where what we were doing is just guaranteeing that the operating budget will be secure from this day on forward?
Mr. Chairman, may I just add to that?
Yes, of course.
I've also had that suggested, Mr. Chairman, that we are setting up a permanent fund for a capital budget that would be used by majorities in power against minorities. So this is a concern of people all over Alaska, that you are setting aside a sum of money that, number one, like Mr. Ward has said, would be used to ensure bureaucracy, but it would also ensure that there be funds for capital, large sums of funds for capital that would be sliced up, Mr. Chairman, the way it is now.
She's not a member of the committee.
Thank you. Mr. Bentley, would you care to respond to Mr. Ward's comments?
Yes, I would. I don't intend any part of that money laid aside to be used for operating expenses at all, but it's strictly just for capital projects. Thank
you. Mr. Munson?
I think at least essentially the thrust of what you're discussing, Mr. Bentley, is already in legislation and has been in previous years. There was a scheme 3 years ago which was called the Capital Projects Fund, Capital Projects Reserve, something of the sort, and presently Governor Sheffield has introduced what he calls his Major Projects Fund, which would set aside money for projects, I think, identified as in excess of $100 million. That is a separate concept. What we're talking about here is attempting to stabilize and to identify the income stream for all state spending, not attempting to identify what it's to be used for. Which is why we said a moment ago to Representative Miller that it does not include any kind of guarantees to the municipalities. It gives them a better look at what they might get. And quite possibly companion legislation might provide some such guarantees. But this is simply for purposes of state budgeting, to stabilize the cash flow and to be able to have a better look at what our cash flow is, and to establish a very substantial additional income stream at the same time.
Well, with the good possibility of reductions in the funds available to the state each year after at least the year 1990, unless they get some help and find something to slow for the state waters offshore.
Front.
General fund, the budget for operating expenses is undoubtedly going to go down if you have to have one-third of the money reserved for capital projects anyway. That's going to put a control on that by itself. But the thing I'm trying to do is to get this stuff set aside to where we can get this built up for our capital projects, where we will know from 1 year to the next exactly what's going to be available instead of this betting on the come. Over.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Bentley, for your comments to this committee. I'd like to thank you very much for taking the time to come in and to make your wishes known.
Also, Mr. Abboud, the same remark I had last year. Keep your cotton-picking hands off our dividend checks, please.
I've never had my cotton-picking hands on it, Dave.
Just talking to the legislature in general, not to anyone specific, but thanks very much. We'll see you guys later.
Thanks, Dave. Just kind of chide you a little bit there. Juno, are there any comments from the Representative Miller or Locker?
Chairman, this is Representative Miller. Just one last sort of observation that somebody out there might want to speak to, more in the form of an observation and a question, but you can respond if you want. I'm wondering if this sort of a plan is not going to result in more spending by the state in one sense. The certainty of the amount is perhaps a threat, and it's a reason why you'd spend more. Right now, in spite of the fact that we attempt to spend every single penny that we can get our hands on, we always exercise a little bit of caution because we don't really know what the income is going to be. And so as a result, we always, and this has been historically true, I think, for 25 years, every year we have missed and erred, fortunately, on the side of conservation, conserving our dollars, that is. And we haven't spent the income has always exceeded what we thought by at least a little bit. Now, if we initiate a plan like this, we're going to know 100% of the dollars that are available, and therefore, I would be not only amazed, but absolutely flabbergasted if the legislature did not spend 100% down to the last absolute remaining penny, which could result in actually an increase in state spending. Maybe that'll be offset by these income investments that we seem to be kind of talking about in many different respects. But I rather doubt it. I think what this will ensure is that we will spend absolutely every dollar right down to the penny. Maybe that's all right. If we've got certainty, maybe that's okay. But I think that might be the case.
Mr. Miller, I understand your concern there. The committee understands the concern. I mean, we understand your concern up here. But does not Section 30 of the draft of the new committee substitute, does that not fairly well clarify that, or do you still have it was in your line of thinking or not? Have you got that in front of you?
Mr. Speaker, Section 30 only deals with
you want to talk to it?
Appropriation limitations after 1986 and until June 30th of the year in which the balance appropriation hits that 18-month formula. What I'm talking about is once the thing is operating, once this forward funding is in place, we will know with certainty. Of course, that's the strength of this proposal. We will know with absolute certainty how many dollars and even how many cents we will have to spend in any given year. My observation is that knowing with absolute certainty exactly how many dollars we can spend, we will spend right up to that absolute limit. We will spend 100% of the dollars that are available to us. As it is right now, we estimate each year how many dollars we have to spend. And of course, that's the bad news. That's the that's the default in the current scheme. But the good news about that scheme is that we always historically are a little bit cautious. Some years more cautious than others, but we're always a little bit cautious, and we never quite spend
by half a billion
right up to the to the amount that was available to us, and some money lapses into the general fund.
We don't.
Actually, the uncertainty of the present scheme forces us to be just a hair conservative on some occasions, whereas under this deal, we'll know exactly how many dollars we have available, and my guess is that we will spend exactly that many dollars.
Mr. Carter?
Yes, I'd just like to say, it's comforting to me when my wife is out of town that I know how much money I have in the bank account and when she's got a checkbook with her, and it's... So I think that it's in the I like to know what's the balance is and what we can have available to spend rather than guessing what might be in that balance. I think only at one time did we overspend. You've been around longer than I, but you're a lot older, I mean, by that. I mean, not that you've been around. But anyway, it would just seem to me more comforting to know what the balance of our account is rather than guess what might be in there and start spending from that scenario.
Mr. Chairman, this is Representative Locker. May I just make a few comments, please?
Of course.
I would just like to say that I agree with Representative Cowdery. I agree that it is much better for a legislator and a husband whose wife is out of town to know exactly how much money they have in the bank to spend. I can only stress to you the importance of this to our municipalities. They too must know what percentage of income is going to be available to them. And they must know this. Now, Mr. Chairman, I know that the Municipal League, who represents over 95% of the people in this state, have as their number one priority some way of requiring funds that they will be able to depend on an annual basis. Now, they're not telling you that you must tell them how many million dollars they may have. They want a percentage of the income. They realize that as revenues go down, that their income will also go down. But when we changed our structure of taxes, we did not insure it, that they would always have a percentage of the income, that they would never suffer a loss. And, Mr. Chairman, they have suffered a loss in the last few years, even though their income has gone up, and in 2 years it has stayed stable. The percentage of the general fund that they get has gone down, and the percentage of money that they would have gotten under the old structure, it has gone down. If we would have left the taxing structure alone, they would not be coming to us at this time.
Anybody else?
So I would just like to say that I think the committee should seriously consider, when they are considering amending the Constitution, that they somehow secure for the municipalities and the people of Alaska some firm way of knowing that you will always have a percentage of the income that comes to this state for these basic services. Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara. I would also, I don't know whether anybody's thought about it, and I hope they've thought about it, that we can't continue. How much more building have we got to do over the years? We got to spend $4 billion every year. What are we going to spend it for? Somewhere along the line, someone ought to say, we don't need another building. We don't need this. We don't need that. I guess it's also dependent upon the population with the services involved and so on and so forth. But we're building a lot of buildings and a lot of things. I'm wondering how many more we have to have, and will we ever come to a point, Mr. Munson, in your opinion, that we can say we don't need this kind of money this year, even though we know we have it. We don't have to spend it. We can save that for another area and maybe bite the bullet, as Mr. Bentley says on occasion.
Well, to respond to the questions and points in reverse order, Mr. Chairman, you're on last. Historically, that has happened in other states. It's happened in New York State and California, two of those most impoverished by their populations. But it was in consequence of very conservative governors. Then Governor Reagan in one case, and then Governor Rockefeller in the other. It has happened also in New Hampshire and a few other states that there were budget surpluses. It isn't typical. There's no question of that. To respond partly to your question and to Mrs. Locker's, there could come a time when we would say that we don't need this much money. We've built everything we can build, but given the necessities of Alaska in this day and age, given the fact that some of our older sister states are as much as 200 years ahead of us in the construction of their infrastructure, their transportation systems, their institutions, their industrial complexes, that's apt to be some time coming. In any given year, however, there's no question we certainly could declare a budget excess, and it has happened, as Representative Miller points out. Further to his point, then, page 3 of the bill, in its section 4, which addresses section 30 of Article 15 of the Constitution, it is specified that appropriations from the Treasury during a fiscal year may not exceed the amount appropriated in the prior fiscal year by more than the cumulative inflation and population growth or decline, as is prescribed by law. What that means is that if one year we budget $4 billion, and the next year we find that we have in the reserve $5 billion, we cannot spend that $5 billion unless we have grown 20% or 25% rather, in inflation and population in the intervening year. Under this legislation, there is a stringent spending limit. There is a stringent call upon the legislature and the administration to control the growth of government within its judgment as to the placement of the funds. Now, this is from a working and growing account, from a live account that continues to grow. So, no, there is no danger that the legislature will spend every dime available in every given year under the practice of the cash-based budgeting system, because it is limited by the amount it was allowed to budget in the previous year and population and inflation growth. Now, as to the 7 or 8 years between passage of the legislation and the time that cash-based budgeting is triggered, spending obviously will be limited by the contributions made to the reserve fund if the general fund is used as the source for the reserve. If it's used from somewhere else, then it will be business as usual if the reserve is derived from somewhere else, like the permanent fund income stream, which is one of the options being discussed. Then it would be business as usual during those intervening 7 or 8 years. If I may add one thing off that particular subject, for the benefit of listeners who might not be aware of it, this being a constitutional amendment will require the approval of 2/3 of the member of each house of the legislature. That's 27 members in the House and 17 in the Senate. And it will require a vote of the people. This is not something the legislature and or the administration can impose upon the people by their own will. This is something that the people will be required to examine and vote upon. And the people must approve the constitutional amendment for cash-based budgeting to become effective. It is contemplated by the Speaker's office, and I've heard members of the committee say the same thing, that ideally it should be on the ballot this fall, this November, in the general election. It must go to a general election, by the way. It cannot be heard in a special election. That ideally it should go this fall, because this may well be the very last chance we'll have to implement this kind of plan. Thank you.
This concept, I really enjoy the concept. I like the concept very much. However, I am a little concerned that here we're dealing right off the top of about $4 billion, $5 billion, between $4 and $5 billion. I guess my concern is, and Representative Miller, I think, pointed a little of that out, that if we go right on down the road and all of a sudden we've got this money, we know we've got it to spend, I find it very difficult that the legislatures, any future legislators or any administration, wouldn't spend up to that amount on things that not necessarily are needed, but they desire. And I think we're still in a state of need in our state versus desire.
All
that are mandatory things that we've got to have, water and sewer and enough of it to be able to maintain our equilibrium over a period of many, many years for our future generations, if you will, or whatever. But the idea of having this big lump of money sitting here, and we say, there, now we can have this, we can have this, we can have this. Are there any checks and balances? Who's going to make the decision again? Is the legislature or the administration going to make the decision to, yes, I guess we'll have that and I won't veto this, and all these bills come out with all kinds of stuff on them? How do you address that?
All that would be required to spend all the money in the reserve in any given year would be another constitutional amendment, which means that you couldn't get at it for at least 1 year at any given time. Because no matter how much money there is in the reserve, no matter how much money is in the account working, earning additional income for the state, the legislature would be limited by the Constitution to the previous year's budget plus a P&I increase, population and inflation increase. So our budgets will continue to increase as long as the money is available and our population and it continues to increase and inflation continues, and of course inflation does continue, and it's foreseeable only that our population will increase. But to come out of a $4 billion budget year with $5 billion in the reserve and to spend all that is constitutionally impossible under this concept.
Thank you, Mr. Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Neil, I'm a co-sponsor on this legislation, and I wanted to very much, my understanding is, and I want you to understand what I think the possibility is I'd like to put a more order into the budget process. And I share a lot of the concerns that Representative Lockhart shares also. And that is about maybe not as to fair share in certain points and getting the proper amount of money to municipalities in the sense of what the proper amount is. But until we have some form of order, my municipality, I think, should have 52% of everything, 52 cents out of a dollar, because that's the population base. And until we have, in certain, a dollar amount, I think we will have politics overriding what is a reasonable business approach to how we're going to appropriate dollars. And that's the situation that we're in now. That's what we have been in for 25 years. And until we have money certain, then we will not be able to have population certain putting forth their interest into the appropriation process. And I think that this is the beginning, and this is something that we should have done 25 years ago, but it was impossible for one reason or another. But I think that now this is the beginning. I'm very excited about this because I foresee this as the beginning of running the state like a business instead of like what it's been run like.
Thank you, Mr. Ward. At this time, I'd like to go to Fairbanks. I understand that Mary Bishop is there. Did you wish to testify, Mary?
Yes, I think I'd like to testify. I think I would like to participate in the discussion. I'm enjoying it a great deal and would like to also thank Mr. Munson for his very knowledgeable testimony, and I appreciate the effort that he and the others that he's mentioned have gone to in studying this. I am also in support of the concept of cash-based budgeting, and I have done some study on it. I would like to see it accomplished as a constitutional amendment with very specific and clear language that's understandable. Part of the problem in the language, as I understand it, of the recently passed spending limit constitutional amendment was that it's the language was just a little bit difficult for people to understand, and I would like to see it be very clear in this cash-based budgeting. I would like to request copies of this report that you have been speaking about, if they could be sent to me or to the LIO office here in Fairbanks. I'd appreciate it.
Yes, Mariette, we'll send that report up to LIO, so you'll have it at your disposal.
Thank you. I would hope to see that the cash-based budgeting could be put into effect in something less than 7 or 8 years and somehow or other speed up the process, perhaps through using the undistributed income account. That would be a possibility. Although I believe it was Mr. Representative Miller that suggested that it would be irresponsible to put it from where it now goes to the permanent fund, which I am very much in favor of. He thought it would be irresponsible to put it into the reserve account. However, I feel like in this instance, it's very much as though I had two different savings accounts, and I have the option of putting that money
for a great investment.
Together, and I don't feel that it is would be irresponsible of me to take it from one and put it in the other, or switch it back and forth at my discretion.
Population.
In my estimation, both of these are savings accounts for the state, and one is for one purpose and one is for the other. And in this particular instance, I believe that the savings account for the reserve appropriation fund for cash-based budgeting is certainly a very worthwhile place to put my savings account. And in that regard, although I oppose using my dividend for, I like my permanent fund dividend, I want to keep that, but I am so enthusiastic about this particular
Mary Bishop.
Issue or this particular idea, that if you can figure out some way that I can give it or loan it to this reserve fund, I would do that, because I don't feel that I'm giving it to any specific capital project, any specific operating budget. I'm giving it to the state so that the state can create a better means of budgeting.
That's the kind of thing we
need. And I feel that this is a very worthwhile project.
Mary, you've pretty much touched the members of the committee, and Mr. Munson That's excellent thinking, and we're very happy to have your comments. The thought just struck me, but someone just said, what would be wrong, Mary, in taking and borrowing the money, now get this now, I'm not proposing it, I'm just saying, what do you think about it? We'll borrow the money from the permanent fund, pay 12% interest, 15% interest, whatever, because we're paying it to ourselves. If it is a good investment, we could probably put this into effect an awful lot quicker and still protect that fund because we would owe it to the fund on a legal and constitutionally put it in there so that we must. That is the first order of business in any given year. And return that fund with a good rate of interest because we're paying ourselves. And then we have it. Rather than let it sit there, which is a good idea, and I don't want to touch the permanent fund either. We don't want the permanent fund to get away from us, that's for sure. But something of that nature, constitutionally, would that not help our situation out to some degree?
I don't know. I'm interested in it, and I certainly, on a personal basis, would be willing to put a check down on some ballot or some not state income tax board, some form that you sent out to me that said, I will personally loan my $350 or whatever it is dollars to this worthy project. One other comment that I wanted to make, and perhaps Mr. Munson could see if I'm on the right track or not. Representative Miller indicated that we might get a greater spending by the governor and the legislators if we go to this, whereas he contended that the legislature now estimates the income and therefore acts conservatively. He thought this uncertainty might be better than if we had a certain amount. Now, in my research on this particular issue, it appears to me that one of the big problems is that the state, the legislature and the governor in the last, since probably 81, have not been acting conservatively, and the appropriations have exceeded both the projected revenue and the actual revenues in many years, and in the very beginning of the annual financial report for fiscal year 83, the letter to Commissioner Rudd from, state ended fiscal 83 with funds available for current operations showing a deficit of $520.1 million in the general fund. Now, this compared with a deficit of the year before of $1,774.4 million at the end of fiscal 1982. Those deficits don't sound to me as that like the governor and the legislature have been acting conservatively, and I think that if they knew the exact amount that was available to them, they wouldn't have had the deficit. So again, this is one of the reasons why I am so strongly in favor of this, and I think it would really speed up the budgeting process and show that we were very responsible as a state,
despite
the fact that we are
and Miller too.
Do have all of our eggs essentially in one oil basket.
I know we have a rabble rouser in the crowd here this morning, so just watch your language in the back row back there. Mr. Munson, would you care to respond?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I would. First, I'd like to thank Mrs. Bishop very, very much for her testimony and her endorsement of the concept. Mr. Miller is correct in part, Mrs. Bishop. One problem with reading the figures available to any of us on any current basis is you pretty well got to have an income statement, which is aged for about 2 years before you know what state income really was. And in fact, what state expenditure in a given year really was. Sometimes we'll spend money, which is we'll budget money, which is in the bank, and not spend it, and it stays there, and so forth. Yes, there was one particular year in which the legislature did very considerably over budget income. For the most part, however, it's been under. And if you recall, this past year, Governor Sheffield has twice put money into the permanent fund against that $1.9 billion or $1.8 billion. Authorization that was created 3 years ago because there was money excess to the revenue stream from what had been budgeted. So for the most part, if you agree with where the governor and the legislature have put the money, they have been essentially responsible with respect to their bank balance. Now, to speak again to the question you raised that Representative Miller raised earlier, And I hope, Mrs. Bishop, you'll be able to get your hands on a copy of the draft bill very soon. It doesn't exist publicly yet because it is only a draft. However, I imagine the committee will be adopting it soon, and it will be available through the office where you are right now. On page 3, in section 4 of the bill, which addresses section 30, article 15 of the Constitution, it requires that the legislature may not budget in any given year more than the previous year's budget, plus a population and inflation increase. So there is a very rigid cap on what the legislature may budget in any given year under cash-based budgeting, much more stringent than presently exists, because presently the ceilings until this very year have been above what the constitutional limitation imposes, and the constitutional limitation is, as you suggest, unclear. There are at least 3 separate opinions rampant in Juneau right now. This one is quite clear. It does not address separate parts of the budget. It addresses the budget in total and puts a very hard and firm lid on it.
Representative Locker and Representative Miller in Juneau, do you wish to make any comments?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Again, I would like to say that it's that rigid cap that concerns me. It is absolutely necessary that it be there. But when it is there, Mr. Chairman, then we must secure for municipalities in revenue sharing and municipal assistance a percentage of this so that they can feel secure in their budget. And in response to Mr. Ward, I agree that if Anchorage has 52% of the population and one of the districts or one of our communities is not allowed to count twice, then Anchorage would get on a population basis the largest, by far, the largest percentage of the revenue sharing and municipal assistance. I'm not talking about capital budget. Now, that is something that's worked out in the legislature and the governor's office each and every year. But we have secured, number one, a spending limit. We have secured that a percentage of that will go for capital. Now we want to secure, like Mr. Munson has said, a rigid cap and a cash in the bank spending. Let's go one step